Welcome to Kick-Ass Radio, hosted by Jo Sainsbury, founder of Kick-Ass Women. Join Jo over the next hour as she shares stories and conversations that are both inspiring and empowering. Having spent over 30 years in the corporate sector, Jo Sainsbury kicked off her heels and became a coal train driver working in the rail and mining industry. It has been her goal ever since to empower and support women who are considering a career change into an industry role, making the transition as smooth as possible. Jo is a walking, talking success story of how taking the plunge into industry can open up a world of opportunity. And you can do it too. If you're a woman working in industry or considering a career change, this is the radio station for you. Let's get into this episode of Kick-Ass Radio.
Hey there, Glowgetters. Welcome to the Kick-Ass Radio Show. Am I excited for today's show? You bet your kick-ass I am. The Australian government says there are about 2.7 million carers in this country, but those are just the carers that are registered with the government. There are also a lot of carers out there that aren't registered. Now, they don't identify as carers. They just see it as their responsibility to care for their loved ones at home. Realistically, the thoughts are that probably 1 in 10 people in Australia who are caring for somebody at home. So if you've got 30 people in your workplace, there are probably at least 3 people that are also carers. And it's the same at school, because there are a lot of young carers out there. So in a class of 30 kids, there are probably 3 kids who are also caring for somebody at home. And the thing is, most people are totally unaware that they even coexist with you. The people they see at work and at school have no idea of the sacrifices they're making for their loved ones. And these are the hidden heroes in our society. And they do what they do out of love. But at the end of the day, it can be detrimental to their very own health and well-being. So today, who are carers? Carers are people who provide unpaid care and support to family members and friends who have a disability, mental illness, chronic conditions, terminal illnesses, maybe an alcohol or drug issue, or who are the frailed and aged. Carers are an integral part of Australia's health system and are the foundation of our aged, disability, palliative and community care systems. There's some pretty astounding and alarming statistics out there also, which I found. So there are over 2.65 million carers across Australia, and carers make up nearly 11% of Australia's population. There's around 861,000 carers who are primary carers, those who provide the most informal support to a family member or friend. Now, there's also 7 out of 10 primary carers are women, of course. The average age of a primary carer is 54, so the stats tell us. However, 1 in 11 carers are under the age of 25, and 1/3 of primary carers provide 40 hours or more of unpaid care per week. That's more than half of primary carers provide care for at least 20 hours per week. So over 1/3 of primary carers have a disability themselves, twice the rate of non-carers. And right now in Australia, there are millions of unpaid carers looking after loved ones who can't take care of themselves. And they are mums, dads, grandparents, and even children as young as 8 years old. Now, it's an exhausting task physically, emotionally, and mentally. But when they need help, who cares for the carers? We're going to find that out here today on Kick-Ass Radio with our special guest and the founding director of the Carers Foundation Australia, Ronnie Benbow. Now, Ronnie is a co-founder of the Carers Foundation Australia, as I said, which is Queensland-based non-profit, providing wellness retreats, advocacy and support for people in caring roles. How wonderful and tremendous is that? And there are some 3 million carers, like we said, across Australia, whose unpaid labour saves the community approximately $1 billion every week. So it's vital and it's an exhausting work that goes largely unrecognised. So without them, Australia's health system would collapse. And we're kind of seeing that now, aren't we, across the nation. As is the case in the broader community, caring responsibilities fall predominantly on women. Now, the 2016 ABS census revealed that females represented 68.1% of primary carers. So we're going through some more stats here. And that 37.8% of carers across Australia report also living with disability themselves, like we said earlier. Now, Ronnie works directly with women and young people exhausted by these responsibilities. And the Carers Foundation provides evidence-based wellness programs to help carers rest, recover, and access vital support to better cope at home. So today we're going to learn all about the Carers Foundation Australia and Ronnie and get to find out how we can best support them. You are listening to the Kick-Ass Radio Show Kickstart, where we talk about all things women working in non-traditional roles in varied male-dominated industries, and I tell you how it is. I'm your host, Jo Sainsbury, the glow-getter, and I hope we can keep you in good company over the coming hour. And I'd also like to make a huge shout out to all the women working out on site and out on track today. I'm losing my tongue here. And we wish you a safe day and have a fantastic shift. And it also might be a good time to do a little bit of a trigger warning that today's show may and does contain some adult language. So let's get into it. Hello, Ronnie.
Hi, Jo. How are you?
Good, thank you, and welcome to Kick-Ass Radio. Firstly, thank you for coming on the show and for sharing some of your valuable time with us today. I know you're super busy, but I also know we're all going to enjoy your company and we're eager to find out what you've got to tell us and how we can support the Carers Foundation Australia. So to kick things off, tell us a little bit about yourself and what were some of the biggest decisions you made in your career and how did they lead you to your current role now?
Wow. I mean, you did such an amazing introduction. Thank you for that. And so going through all those stats again, you've done a great job with your research. And one thing you didn't mention was actually, and I'll get to that through our conversation, that it's an actual fact that 30% of carers can often die before the person they're caring for. So that's how strenuous it can be. And that's, you know, by the time carers get to us, they're at that stage. So, but anyway, back to the question. I've already digressed, haven't I?
Oh, that's all right. Where can you do that?
So I guess my journey started a long, long time ago. How it affected my career path is probably when I was only 17 years old, actually, and I was a student nurse. So I actually was in the community visiting families that were caring for their loved ones, and I would see the carers, and even when they came to hospital, when their loved one came to hospital for procedures or whatever, I would notice that the carers were just in a worse state of health than the person they were caring for. And I really resonated with me because I thought, well, who looks after these people? Who looks after the carers? And realistically, that was 40 years ago and nothing much has changed. So I decided back then that I was going to make a difference and I was going to, you know, form a healing haven and fix all these people and have a safe place for them to come. So, you know, we could patch them up and, you know, they can connect with others in similar situations, because it's very isolating being a carer. Unless you've actually lived it, you know, your families don't understand, your friends don't understand. So realistically, you're doing it on your own most of the time. And that, you know, affects your mental health after a while. And I guess what resonated with me the most when I was that age was, you know, I was only a young student nurse, as I said, 17 years old. And when I used to visit, you know, families in the community, there was a young man that was caring for his mum, and he was only a few years younger than me. And, you know, his mum had a severe stroke, so she was quite incapacitated. So he had to give up school to care for her. So every time we went back to visit him, his health was slowly declining. And that really affected me and bothered me, because nobody ever bothered to call in and check on him. It was always obviously to care for his mum, because she was the one with the medical condition. But over the time, you know, his health, he had to give up school. He couldn't do any sporting activities. He couldn't, you know, engage with any friends. So he was really isolated and he was becoming more depressed. And sadly, I learned in a few years' time, when he was about 21, that he actually did take his own life, because he just couldn't do it any longer. And it's a common statistic amongst carers that happens, that they just, you know, work, you know, what we call from compassion fatigue. They just over, you know, probably, you know, give their entire life to care for their loved one, but they can't look after themselves because they don't have the time or the resources, which is where we come in. So it's taken me a lifetime to get there because obviously I went on and did my career. I got married. We had four beautiful boys. And then ironically, I became a carer because my husband had a near fatal accident. So he was paralysed from the neck down. And so that I had to give up my nursing and I had to look after his businesses and obviously have, you know, four small children to look after. And then as he was getting slowly better, we shifted down. We were living in Cairns. We moved down to Brisbane to educate the boys. And then over the next few years, one of our sons got a really severe medical condition. So that, again, you know, obviously your priorities are your family. You don't, as you said, you don't consider yourself as a carer. You just do what you have to do and you look after your family. And then once he slowly recovered, but that was, he's okay, but I mean, that was a slow recovery, 7 years. And then my beautiful father, who had been living with us the whole time as well, he was nearly 90. He had a massive stroke. So I cared for him until he passed away. And I still had mum living with us. She was 89 as well. So that's when I decided to establish the foundation to do this for part-time, for full-time, because prior to that, when we moved down from Cairns, we were doing privately funding carer wellness programs, working with other care organisations, and we saw the significant difference it made. So we just knew we had to do that. So from 2015, that's when we established the Carers Foundation to focus on caring for carers full time, and that's what we've been doing ever since.
Yeah, and like your journey is one that's been fraught with many life's challenges, so your courage and resilience, it's very commendable and it's radiantly clear how they've become such important values in your life and your career and your business. So
absolutely.
We commend you for that, Ronnie. It's quite a story. And as well as you said, you become not only your husband's carer, but you're already in the role of caring for your elderly and aging parents. So
yes,
that, and as well as, you know, one of your own children. So a very big demand on yourself there. So we kind of touched on this next question, was about, you know, your journey being fraught, but how it led to co-founding the Carers Foundation. So at the time, did you think this new chapter would take you where it is today?
Not really. I mean, that's what I always had envisaged. That was always the passion and the dream, was to have this healing haven, you know, to look after carers of all ages, especially the young, you know, the teenagers, because I just feel that they are totally hidden in our community. And that's, you know, we see that over and over, because we've even had programs where one of our yoga instructors, for example, was a teacher, and we usually do the children, you know, the kids on the holiday, so we don't disrupt their schooling because that's their only normal part of their life. Yeah. And she came out and one of her students was actually in with our young carer program, and she said, "What are you doing here?" She said, "Well, I care for my mum, miss." And she had no idea that this student of hers was actually caring for her mother that had quite a severe medical disability. And then it all fell into place, why she was always tired, why she was always late for school, why she missed, you know, doing her homework. And she just assumed she was a lazy, you know, uninterested student. But the fact was that she was actually caring and was not identified. And as you said before, you know, probably in every classroom there's three, you know, kids that are caring for a family member, whether it's a disabled brother or sister or a mum with a mental health condition. And these kids just do it because they have no choice and they just, you know, they don't know any different really, but they need support.
And definitely do. And I know we've previously made the comment of the fact that, you know, carers are the ones who are hidden in society. And we're all very complacent. We don't think about the carers. All the focus is on the person with the disability or the illness. So we need to stop to think and ask the carer how they are going. And the carer is the one who is carrying the brunt of the work that they do, and they are just as exhausted as the person in care. So, it's, you know, to each and every individual, we do need to change our focus and focus on the carer as well. Definitely.
Exactly. Absolutely. Absolutely. And that's very,
in regards to that story you were saying about that teacher, there's a video on I think it's on Facebook or on Instagram now, it's been getting around, of a very similar instance over in America where a young fellow was late for school every day, and the teacher was pretty harsh on him. And it wasn't until we seen him outside of school one day. He would, I think it was his grandmother, or his younger brother, he'd take somewhere first thing of a morning, and the teacher actually witnessed him doing that, and the penny dropped, and realised why he was late to school every day, and the whole persona of that teacher student relationship changed completely. And it's a very touching and heartwarming story, but as it comes back to complacency, because we all have the blinkers on and we just don't think about the actual
thing. That's right.
Yeah.
Well, that's right. And unless it affects you, you don't think about it, and that's why they are hidden heroes in our community, because they just get on with doing it and never doing their complain.
Job.
Never ask for anything. You know, they feel quite embarrassed to ask for help, which is what we need to, emphasise that they do need support.
Rightio. So introduce us to the Carers Foundation and tell us what it's all about. Walk us through some of the fantastic programs and services the Foundation offers and how best they can work, not only for the carer, but the families also, don't they? It provides,
of course,
it provides relief for them too.
Absolutely. So we work with a lot of other care organisations, and they, we encourage them to identify carers that are just not coping and they're hitting. We don't want them to sort of reach that health crisis breakdown. We want them to really contact us before they get to that state. But realistically, by the time carers do get to us, they are quite broken. They're suicidal. They're disengaged, and the thing is, because they save the government so much money, in fact, it's up to $83 billion annually now, which is probably $1.4 billion a week in replacement healthcare. Surely they're entitled to have at least two, little breaks a year. And that's what they need to focus on their health and wellbeing. So, a well carer is going to be a much better carer, and they won't break down and end up in hospital, again, saving the government money. So by the
Elbow's
time
good, Elbo's there, good at giving out money. He should be giving out money.
Yeah, no, it's all right. He's on our list. He's on our follow-up list. So I guess when carers arrive, we just keep the groups quite small, and it just works. The outcomes are so much more powerful by doing that. We just find the really bigger groups, people who get, they segregate in the different groups. But the small, we only have 6 to 8 on every program, and we try to identify carers in similar situations so they've got that factor in common. And then we always do a pre-assessment before they come. So we actually ask what their interests are, and we try to incorporate that, like something they haven't done for a long, long time. Just any little thing that they love to do, we try to incorporate that in the program for them. So we do 3-day programs, which are really quite comprehensive and all focused on mental health and wellness. But we also do 1-day programs, and we do 1-day mother-daughter retreats or father-son retreats. We do half-day retreats, or just little pamper packages, really, just to, if they haven't got time to get away for too long, so they can just escape for the morning, have a morning tea or a lunch and a massage. And then they can go back into it. Yeah, just because obviously it's not possible for some carers to get away for 2 or 3 days or 1 day, but a half day. So the 3 days we have to work with organisations to help, provide care for their loved one or their family so they can get away and they're not worried about them while they are away. And I guess just to go through it, what happens is when they arrive, we always, obviously we're very different, and our point of difference is probably because of our personal touch that we give. So we always are greeted with a beautiful warm hug. And that's, very powerful, because often they're so broken and they're just so disengaged and they haven't had any human touch for so long. They just break down and cry, because often you'll hear say, I haven't been touched for 4 years. I haven't had a hug for, 8 years. They just don't get that because they're so busy doing what they're doing with their loved one. And, if they're not responsive, they just don't get that connection and that human touch. And as we all know, that's so healing. So that's always a big positive for what we do. It was difficult through COVID, but we worked around it. And then we always have a conversation in our first workshop, just let them share their story. And that is amazing, because often, as you say, as you have highlighted, that all the focus is on that person with the disability or the illness. And everyone always asks, how are they going? How are they doing? But no one ever stops to say, how are you going, to the carer? And when they are asked that, they don't know what to say, because no one's ever asked them. So for them to sort of have some space, we have a talking stick. So whoever's holding that's their turn to talk. They can share their story, and it's, there's never a dry eye in the house, because they just don't get that opportunity to share their story. And to be heard. And I guess that's a big part of what we do, is just listen and let them talk, because they don't get that opportunity at all anywhere.
And that's conversation, just having a general conversation.
Yes.
Because like with caring, it's physical work, it's mental work, it's you know, they have responsibilities such as, you know, management of medications, their emotional and social support to the actual person they're caring for. But yeah, yes, that's exactly what we're talking about. They themselves have that emotional and social support. So and
absolutely
the programs, the yoga and all that, that's giving them relief to their physical
absolutely. So we focus on their mental
all of those kind of responsibilities that they're tasked to do. So absolutely. To actually have conversations and vent and let all out all the emotions of, you know, the hard tasks that they've had to do each and every day.
Absolutely.
It gives them a fresh look.
Yeah, and the good thing about that is they're actually with people that totally get it and totally understand that. They don't have to explain why they feel and why they do what they do. They get it. They get it. So that alone, look, that forms that really strong connection for them when they do leave after the program, so they do stay in touch. And as you say, we focus on their mental health, so we do a lot of mental health resilience in the programs, just teaching them how to cope, different strategies to learn to manage their stress, because obviously stress and anxiety is a huge part of dealing with life-threatening situations every day, especially for the children, the teenagers. And also we do focus on the physical, so we do full body massages and therapies. We do sound wave therapies. We've got a healing bed now. So, you know, there's a lot of things that we do to focus on their, you know, full emotional, mental and physical well-being. Mm-hmm. And when they change, look, the reason, you know, we've still never ceases to amaze us to see people arrive that are so broken, basically on the edge of suicide, to leave totally transformed. You know, they actually become engaged, they're connected, they feel so much better, they've had their pain relieved for a couple of days, they've been able to rest. We do a lot of meditation and just, as you say, gentle movement. It's just life-changing in 3 days. Like, you know, it's hard to even fathom, but it's amazing.
It's like a rediscovery of themselves, isn't it?
And how
empowering and enlifting is that for them, as you said, to actually a self-awareness that they are a human being and they do exist. They're just not a person on a robotic schedule every day doing the same thing in and out, you know, whereas they are
providing, they are
providing absolutely essential service, but they still need to provide care for themselves and make themselves feel valued and worthwhile.
And like the last few years have been very, very challenging. So, I mean, obviously with COVID and the isolation, additional isolation, and realistically carers live with isolation issues. But, you know, I guess it's probably the first time the general public have actually experienced a little bit of isolation, like their isolation. We're all complaining because we're locked at home and we had to watch the TV and we couldn't get out. But that's a normal life for a carer. They do that. But it was amplified with COVID, obviously, because they couldn't access their services. They couldn't get to appointments. They couldn't get outside. And if you've got a child at home with quite severe ADD and has to have that routine, I mean, it's pretty challenging, especially if you've got dementia, elderly with dementia that are quite aggressive. It's not fun being home with them. So you know, a lot of carers end up with what we call accidental abuse, you know, injuries from, you know, just caring for their loved one.
And it's you know, it's such a sad fact, and it's a, you know, it's in your face there to see so many young people that are carers. And I got to meet a couple of those carers that have been to your programs at the charity luncheon, and wonderful stories they are, but actually, you know, very heartbreaking to hear too.
Yes.
Kind of lives to majority of these children and young teens and young adults have, you know, what hope do they hold for their future if they think that's all their life is?
It's really heart-wrenching actually to think they don't get a choice. As you say, you met some of the girls, or I don't know who you spoke to, but I mean, these kids end up with PTSD and quite severe mental health issues because they don't realise that they've missed out on their entire teenage years. They don't get a choice, you know, for them to even have any fun or go out, or, you know, some of the girls, you know, haven't had a haircut for 7 years and haven't never worn makeup. Just those little things that we take for granted, they don't even get a chance to do. And
they find it hard to go to school or to university. Mm. They can't keep up with a course if they're, you know, they've enrolled in something. They're bullied. Yep. They find it difficult to, you know, to make or keep friends because, as you said, the isolation keeps them away from all those those resources yeah. and social life.
And not only that, their friends just have got no idea. Like I know a couple of girls, they were caring for their mum for 10 years and they said, oh, but your mum should be caring for you. They, you know, and they said, mum, no, mum's really, really sick.
Yeah.
And they said, they can't go out. Like they said, why can't you come out? Why can't you come out? And they said, well, if we did, you know, they couldn't go out anyway. But, you know, as they said, their friends are on a totally different level. All they're worried about are their boyfriends and their makeup and which party they're going to. And they said, well, if they do go out, all they're worried about is if mum's going to be alive when they get home. So they can't connect on that level at all. Like these kids are just so mature for their age. Like these 14-year-olds are just could have adult conversations with them. They can't relate to a typical 14-year-old because they don't have the same challenges or issues to deal with every day.
That's it, because they're taking on responsibilities well beyond the years, aren't they?
Absolutely. Most adults wouldn't do what these kids do in a lifetime.
Life
threatening. You know, I've got, you know, kids doing resuscitation, you know, every couple of days on their brother or sister or, you know, suctioning or just things that you wouldn't even think of. You know, that's part of their normal life. Most adults wouldn't cope with that at all. But that's just what they do and they learn to live with that and they think that's their normal life, but it's not.
Yeah.
So it does have long-term impacts on them.
And as I said, I know firsthand the impact that the Carers Foundation had on some young carers like Sarah and Emma and Jasmine. So
yeah.
Describe a typical day for you and also for someone experiencing a retreat, like we kind of mentioned that. So how do you want people to feel when they do experience a retreat?
Because we just don't want them to be alone. We want them to know that they're not alone. We want them to be empowered. We want them to feel just full of compassion. Like all our team are full of compassion, and that's one thing we is a must with the Carers Foundation. Every single person involved has been a carer and has got lived carer experience. We've all been there. We all know what it's like to be in those dark holes that you don't know what the next hour is going to be, let alone what the next day is going to bring. So we totally get it. So I guess when they come to us, they're embraced with love and compassion and kindness and caring. And often, especially for these children, it's the first time they've actually experienced a kind, loving environment, which is heart-wrenching, but it's a fact. And they actually embrace it once they get used to it. They think, oh, wow, I've never had this before. You know, we hear the conversations they have with back home, which are not very pleasant and the way they're treated. So we know they're going home to that. So we always make sure that, you know, that doesn't define who they are. It doesn't mean it has to be like that forever. We just teach them strategies to cope so that when they go back, we can't change what happens at home, but we can change how they deal with it every day. And that's really vital for them to, you know, to cope.
Yeah.
And it works because they'll ring back and tell us and the feedback. No, we know it works from the feedback when they ring back and say, oh, look, I did this and mum didn't bother me because I did this and did that and mum wanted to know I wasn't angry at her anymore and all these sort of things. So they actually learn to cope with all the extra stress that they deal with. That, you know, as you say, most adults wouldn't have a clue what to do. So we just want people to feel that love and compassion that they get when they come with us and be embraced. So they know they're not alone. When they leave, they meet others, as I said, other people on the retreat. So they always keep in touch. They form their own groups. So we know, we follow up afterwards and we can see they're keeping in touch. And if they identify an issue with one of them, they'll let us know so we can sort of reach out and follow up as well. So that ongoing connection is vital. I think that's probably the biggest part that we see. And that's, you know, what we like to, you know, encourage when they're there. So,
and it is. I know from, you know, reading quite a few of the testimonials from carers that have been on the retreats, you know, they're able to get their own mental health back in check. They go home with a feeling of, you know, empowerment, and they go home with a whole new aspect or perspective on their role. They know that, you know, there is something more out there for them and there is support out there. So it's great to hear those stories. And
it's great to see them.
It is. And definitely great to see that they are actually putting themselves up for the retreats, or they're accepting the invitations to go. So we need
it's hard. I mean, that's why we offer the one day first, because often they can't get away. So they come and then they can see what it's like. It takes a little bit for them to come. But once they've been there and they know how it makes them feel, obviously then they want to come back and they ring all the time. So that's, you know, the long-term goal would be that they check in, do their one day, they do the 3 days, and they can just rebook again for another 6 months, you know, so they can actually know that they're coming back because, you know, when we first started, we were having carers out there. Some of these women hadn't had a day off in 20 years. Like, I remember the first group we did. That was just a long time ago when we did it, you know, privately. And we had this gorgeous little lady come, and she was about 75 years old, I think. And it turned out to be her birthday that day. And we didn't know, but we found out on the day it was her birthday. So we just, to be there, and when we arrived, we gave her a big hug. And I just remember her crying because she said, she was one of the ones that's always resonated with me. Yeah. I haven't been touched in about 15 years because my husband had a stroke and I've been caring for him the whole time. And then we found out it was her birthday and we made a cake for her. And she just bawled her eyes out. She said, I haven't had a birthday as such, you know, for about the whole 20 years. And she said, I'd probably just be, you know, at home having a Vegemite sandwich up to my elbows and, you know what, turning my husband. So she just couldn't believe it. And just those little things that, as I said, the smallest things make the biggest difference.
They truly do, yeah.
Yeah, and just having mums arrive that may be covered in bruises and they'll just stop and stand and say, is it wrong? I want my child to die because they have severe autism and they just beat her up every day and she has to go home to that. And, you know, they're not going to ever report it because as they get the accidental abuse, I mean, that's what they have to put up with.
Yeah.
They don't report that because they know they don't want them to go into the system because, you know, the medical system's so broken. They rather put up with that every day, but they get to a point where they can't do it anymore. It's just exhausting and they just, you know, hit the wall and they can't do it. And you can understand why, because it's just so unrelenting, you know, the exhaustion and just everything involved with caring 24/7.
And that's exactly right. And it's extremely empowering that the foundation has set some pretty mighty formidable objectives with what you provide to the carers.
Yep.
And we do need to advocate more predominantly, especially for the community, to understand, respect, value and empower all people that are caregivers in our society. And
exactly.
For those ones that are even in our closer inner circles, that we're not even providing that care to them and they're part of our families. They're caregivers in our own families and we're just, you know, we're asking the question, well, how's mum today or how's Uncle Johnny today? Without even, you know, a second thought to how them.
That's right.
They are themselves.
Oh, it's not that hard to care for them. Yeah. You're there home all day. You don't do much, you know.
Yeah.
They knew. That's why they don't go and stay there.
It paints a whole new picture when you hear of the stories like this and you take on a whole new respect and understanding of
absolutely
the role. So we're going to have a little break and listen to one of the show sponsors and we'll be back with you all soon.
Hey, Glowgetters, have you heard about Kick-Ass Women? Founded by Jo Sainsbury, Kick-Ass Women is dedicated to empowering and supporting women who are considering a career change into an industry role. Visit our brand new website at www.kickasswomen.com.au or follow Kick-Ass Women on Facebook and LinkedIn today to keep up to date with all things Kick-Ass Women and the incredible opportunities and content we have for you. See you there, Glowgetters.
Okay, thanks for tuning back in, where we are chatting to Ronnie Benbow from who is a co-founder of the Carers Foundation Australia. Welcome back, Ronnie.
Thanks, Jo.
So what are you most proud of when you think about the Carers Foundation?
Wow, I guess seeing how far we've come from a dream 17 years ago, it's taken a lifetime to get here. But I really, realistically, the biggest, the most proudest moments are when we see the carers leave and see the difference that we've made in their lives and know that they've got connections ongoing and know they're not going to be alone. That's what I'm proudest of the most.
And that should be, you know, your essential work has changed the lives of carers right across Australia.
Yeah.
So helping them to improve their health and give them hope. So with such fulfillment and achievements to date like these, that should make you very and most proud of what you've accomplished so far and with so much more hope for the future for the Carers Foundation. So, yes.
Absolutely.
Very.
Yeah, and we've got big plans. Big plans for the foundation. So it is. It's very humbling, but it's just to see the difference. It's why we do what we do.
Exactly right. So what has been the most important lesson that you've learnt along the way in this journey creating the foundation? Lots to learn,
The most important lesson, I guess, just never give up on your dream, really. Just stay resilient, stay strong, just persevere, be persistent. Really, just if you have a dream that you need to do, just keep going for it. I mean, you're going to get knockbacks and kickdowns all the way. You'll get people that get in the way, that you have people with their own agenda that want to do their own thing. And it's interesting, being a charity, you think most people are there to support you, but it's actually quite the opposite, which really floored me. I mean, coming from a nursing background, going into running my husband's businesses when he, you know, when I had to, when he was unwell. But yeah, it's interesting. It's just, I guess you just really have to persevere and have that resistance and just be, and the determination, and I guess a huge chunk of stubbornness as well. So, you know, and get used to the knockbacks. Like, you know, having a charity, when I first started applying for grants, like I knew what I had the passion about, but that doesn't mean everybody else has. They don't get it. They don't understand. So when I used to get knockback after knockback after knockback, I was devastated. But now I just go, I expect a knockback. And so when I get a yes, I go, oh my God, we got it. So I just expect a no all the time. And if I get a yes, it's like, yay.
And look, no journey is without its obstructions, its roadblocks and detours. So, however, everyone's success, our success is built on how we manage these challenges and learn from our failures. And Absolutely. No doesn't mean no. No means that we go about things in a different manner. Yes. How can we attack it in a different way? How do we, you know, so no doesn't mean no all the time. So
that's for sure.
And the greatest business people around the world have all failed numerous times before their success was created for them. So we do learn from our failures and, definitely never give up.
No, that's it. And I think that's a big lesson for anybody and any dream that people have. Just, you know, people will tell you a million reasons why you shouldn't do it and how hard it is. Well, that's all the more reason to do it and prove them wrong.
That's exactly right.
I'm going to do this, you know.
That's the mindset you get, isn't it? When someone tells you no, or and they're, you know, they're coming down on you saying, oh, you won't be able to do that. It's like, you just watch it.
Yeah.
You just
exactly, and I guess initially it was like that. Initially, you know, you sort of think, okay, well, maybe I am the stupid one. Maybe I am the one. I am not young and naive when I had this vision, and now I'm just old and naive. But I thought, no, we see the difference. We see the outcomes. We know what we do. We're the only charity in Australia that actually provides these 3-day programs for carers for no cost at all. And obviously, you know, and the long term vision is to get a new centre. Which will be Australia's first wellness centre for carers. So that's another huge vision that we've got that we're working on at the moment. And it's so needed. Like this, we get calls every day from carers all over Australia because they see our socials, they see what we're doing, and they say, well, where can we go in Adelaide? Where can we go over in Perth? Where can we go in the middle of, you know, outback? Whoops, you know, and I go, well, you know, this is what we need to do. The need is so great. It's increasing every day. Because the systems are so broken, more and more people are forced to be at home caring for their loved ones. So it's only going to get worse. So we really need to be supporting more carers, and we need to do a lot more advocacy in that area, which we will be doing. Yeah. And it just takes time and energy. But again, that seeing the outcomes and seeing what we do is gives you more determination to do it.
Yeah. And so, I know you just mentioned that's, you know, your vision. Because I was going to ask you if there was one thing that keeps yourself and the Carers Foundation moving forward, what would it be? So, yes, you definitely, you know, you said provide education and wellness support centre. So,
the purpose is seeing the difference we make. Like, we know we make a difference. We save carers' lives all the time. And just share a little story. The last group we had, you know, there was a lady there that had 5 children with disabilities and special needs, like 5. And we rang her on the Sunday to remind, you know, she actually rang us on the Sunday to say that she couldn't come. She couldn't attend, and whatever we said resonated with her to come. And we just said, look, this is for you. You need to do this for you. It's not about anybody else. You sound like you need this. So she arrived totally broken, suicidal, just wasn't coping at all, didn't know what to do. But over the 3 days, she just, again, transformed, met new people, was able to share her story, got people with understood, because that's half the battle, is getting people that understand what you go through. Mm-hmm. So on the Wednesday, she came up and just kept giving us this massive big hug. And I said, well, yeah, thank you. I said, no, you don't have to thank. She said, yes, I do. She just squeezed and squeezed for about 3 minutes. And she said, I do have to thank you, because on Sunday when I rang you, I had actually planned to kill myself. Mm-hmm. And like, she's got 5 children and she just couldn't do it anymore. No support, does it all on her own. So you can see why they reach that crisis point, you know, and we have to stop that. We have to stop them getting to that health crisis breakdown. And that's why they need to have these regular quality breaks, because if they knew they could come back in 6 months, we'd just rebook them back in. Yep. But at the moment, because we don't have regular funding, or we're not government funded, we can't guarantee we're going to have that money to get them back in. So it's always, goodness me, we'd love to get you back. But, you know, it's depending on, you know, how much money we have and where we can get the funding from, which, I mean, I apply for grants and we do fundraisers, as you know, but it's not enough. We need to make sure we get more
continual
funding.
Income for you, income source there for you.
Exactly.
And we can see it, we can hear it when you speak. You're so invested and passionate about your vision, committed to doing all you can to make it so much more. So we wish you well in that, and we will help
absolutely.
You as much as we can along with that. So that talking about, you know, medium, short, long-term aspirations with the Wellness Centre, I mean, I think we had we were in a conversation outside of here talking about what's the retreat made up of. It's cabins, it's on a property. So where's
we've got a facility a fellow's holding for us, but obviously the issue is raising the $5 million to secure it, and it's purpose built. Really, we can move in tomorrow if we wanted to, so it would be a center that carers could come anytime. It's not just a drop-in center, it's a center that when they before they reach that crisis point, they can come and just, you know, have a sleep. Sometimes they just need to get away and get some sleep, you know, and just not have to even be involved in the programs, just to get away and have someone care for them for 24 hours, give them a meal, let them have a sleep, have a nice hot bath, just refresh themselves. You know what it's like when you just get that point. You just need a little reset. But we will also do our programs there as well, but it'll also be a training centre so we can actually train more volunteers and facilitators so we can expand our reach, because we need to get out into rural communities, which I'm really passionate about, getting into other areas around Australia. And also it'll be a social enterprise so we can do paid corporate retreats to do their wellness days, and that'll give us that sustainability long term so we can fund the carers to come out. And so we won't have this issue funding all the time.
Therein lies, you know, an outreach there, because majority of workplaces now around the country have a mental health policy. So they will be looking for those wellness retreats for employees, for management, because there's so much burnout now with COVID, with the rising pressure and uncertainty of our lives, you know, inflation, the economy. The state of of the nation with its health crisis. The mental
health. There is so much, so much stress and anxiety, and as you say, it's affecting everybody's mental health.
Yes.
And obviously, you need to look after your workers. You know, like even corporates, so they're actually better performers if they get away for a day and reset. And really, it'll just be a reset day for them. We'll bust them out and do the whole day of doing some mindfulness, you know, doing a massage, whatever we need to do. But then for their, you know, their workers, and that's, you know, that's one way we can sustain the foundation long term. So that's the big goal.
Yes, definitely. And we wish you well, and we'll try and help you as much as we can with that. So now let's get on to something left afield here now. You became a writer and author. Now, did you kind of fall into it? And I know you had your own story to tell, because we share co-authorship of a compilation.
Yes. Yes.
Leaders.
Just have to happen to have one here.
Yes.
We do.
We're both very proud of it. Yes.
Yeah, I'm so blessed we did, because I got to meet you, and that's
that's exactly right. So was this your first writing experience? Tell us about
I had done a compilation similar before, and I guess really the only reason I, you know, engaged to do that was really to raise awareness for the foundation, because people, even though we sort of, you know, are getting well known, we're still not that well known. People don't know who we are, what we do. So it was really just to get it out there so people could sort of start reading the story and hearing about what, you know, we need to do for our carers. That was more an awareness thing, because my story, I mean, that's only a snippet of what we've actually been through. I've got a whole book of my own to go.
And you do, everyone's got a book within themselves. And you know, I'm so proud of that, of this book, and to be alongside you in the compilation. It's truly a book of heartwarming stories. It reminds me of Chicken Soup for the Soul, which is one of my all-time favourite books. And the heart of Humble Leaders is the idea that individuals coming together can change the way that women think and feel about themselves because of their own story. So,
yes.
In other words, yeah, it's a beautiful book that embraces the idea of collective individualism and sharing advice yep. for women from all walks of life and different backgrounds. And we've all got, you know, such wonderful stories to share. And I know in your chapter you mentioned that, or you say that you were an adopted and you're an only child. So there in
yes.
itself is a story.
Yes, it was. Yes, I know. And I guess I was very blessed because I was adopted from birth. So, you know, I had the kindest, most loving parents. And I guess that's where I get that kindness from. And it's just, you know, natural that I progressed into a caring profession because my dad was the eldest of 13. I think mum was the middle of 8. So they came from huge families. And here I was an only child. So,
and there's another avenue, you know, for when you get the opportunity to talk about your own experiences and share real life stories. That could be another activity maybe at your retreat.
Yes.
The carers to start writing, you know, because it's such an enlightening feeling, isn't it? When you write,
it is.
When you start writing and it all just starts coming out. And it's a mental refresh. It's a reset.
It's actually
be able to get clear very, all that junk out of your head.
It's very, very powerful. We do a bit of journaling, actually. Yeah. And I'll tell you what the most powerful one we've ever done was. We do what we do call as a father-son retreat. So we have the dads come that are caring for their wife or their child with a disability, and they have one of the other children that hasn't got the able-bodied child come. And obviously they've been to our place as a young carer. So they never get time. The normal child, that's a terrible word to use, but the able-bodied child never gets quality time to spend with the parent because obviously when they're at home, all the focus is on whoever's got the illness and the disability. So we do these mother, daughter, father, son retreats, which are just amazing. So they get to spend a day together, just the two of them, and usually it's the first time they've ever had that chance to do that. So when talking about the writing, like they share their story initially and it's really powerful to see the young fellow, like the young carer, young boy, see his dad break down and cry, how difficult it's been on his side, like losing all his friends, having a child with a disability, how he feels inadequate caring for his other kids, how he feels he hasn't got the time. And it's interesting it's good for the young boy to see that because they've never seen that side of dad. Yeah. And then when the young boy speaks to say how he feels unloved, how he doesn't get any attention.
Isolated,
and he's left at home all the time when they go to hospital and whatever, you know, all that. So that really forms a strong connection. But then we did this exercise, a writing exercise, where they actually got to write letters to their loved ones. And oh my God, these men wrote these most beautiful stories to their wife or their child or their other siblings. And they were in tears actually sitting there writing them, and they were actually writing these little cards and these stories.
Because
and
it, how much it comes felt. From the heart, doesn't it? That's where it all comes from, these heartfelt feelings.
Yes.
Of the desperation of, you know, they've got all this emotion inside but they just can't get it out.
Exactly. And how much they do love them and they feel sorry but they haven't had time to spend with them. They've realised now that, you know, all the focus has been on this and they're going to make a bigger effort. But just expressing their feelings so they never get a chance to do that, and for them to actually write it and see it and feel it. And we've got an amazing male facilitator. So when we do the male groups, you know, we do, obviously it's very structured, very differently to the female groups. You know, the females focus on
would
a
have to be
pampering. Yeah. But the men, we just go down the creek and, you know, sit down by on the rocks and they just, you know, do their men stuff and their men talk and all have a fire and they sit around that. It's just, you know, very empowering for them to be able to share their story. And in fact, usually it's the first time they've actually spoken about having a disabled child because they don't tell their mates, they don't go to the pub and talk about it, they don't tell anybody else, and their family don't want to know. So for them to be able to share that in the comfort of all these other men with similar situations, and it's so you know, we just love it because at the end they all gather around and they're like little schoolboys. They're sharing their phone numbers, they're sharing their little emails, and we form a little group for them. And you know, it's the first time they've had people that actually they could truly really talk to that understand.
And how humbling to see that everyone can discover their very own unique purpose. It's remarkable.
Absolutely.
And their personal encouragement to each other. And it,
absolutely.
It would make them feel like they could conquer the world, you know, after having that bit of, you know, reassurance and
life changing. It's life changing.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah, it is. So, it really is. And that's why we do what we do.
Yeah,
people always say, when are you going to look after you? Oh, we're too busy. We've got to, you know, this is why we do what we do, because we see the difference it makes. And I think anybody that's been on any of the programs, like they just can't believe it. Like that's why they keep coming back and want to volunteer their time, because it's just so powerful and engaging and just, Yeah, it just you know, empowers you as well as them, and you know that it's making a difference in their life. So that's why.
So do you think you've got a book in you? Do you think you'd write it?
I just need another 50 hours in the week. Unless I can talk it at night in my sleep when I lie down.
You could probably record it. Yeah, you could record it.
That's probably the only way it's ever going to happen.
Technology out there that turns your audio into text.
That's true. That's the only way it's ever going to happen.
Yeah. Now, Ronnie, you've been so deserving of some fantastic awards and acknowledgements. Mm. Which award? Which achievement do you look at and think,
wow,
I'd love to go back in time and tell my younger self that this was possible?
Wow. I guess the biggest one for me was being nominated for Australian of the Year and being in the finalist as Queensland nominee. And mind you, the three most inspiring people you can imagine. So there was Dr. Ross Gnomes, who does all the outback cardiac muffs. I mean, you know, to be up against him, I mean, what a joke. And then, of course, Dr. Dinesh Palapana, who's you know, he's the quadriplegic lawyer and doctor, and they come up to me and say, "Oh, good luck." I said, "Oh, no need, I can see who's going to win here." And they go,
"Self-belief, Ronnie."
Yeah, I was just so humbled to be there. There's no way I knew I was going, but I just couldn't believe I was even amongst such, you know, amazing people, and that was all in itself was, oh, God, why am I here? I don't deserve this. You know, I just don't do that sort of thing. So I was quite shocked to even get the nomination, let alone being the finalists. But I guess really the reason for it, and I always believe, you know, the universe puts things out there and things happen for a reason. It was because of Dinesh, you know, like him and his mum come up to us, and of course he's a quadriplegic doctor and lawyer who practices at the Gold Coast Hospital. And he came up with his mum, who's obviously a full-time carer, and he has, you know, five other full-time carers with him. So the caring thing really resonated with them. Mm-hmm. So he's now our patron. So that was a reason why. So he's our patron, and he's sort of fully supportive of what we do. And it's amazing just to be involved. So I guess, yeah, I would never have believed that. You know, you see them on TV when you're little, wow, these people are incredible. To think I was even anywhere near that. It was just, yeah, that was very, very humbling, that's for sure.
And you were also named as the Moreton Bay Citizen of the Year last year. So congratulations. So well deserved. Wonderful acknowledgements and achievements. And it's testament to the work that you do and your passion and your purpose there.
Yes.
To learn more about how we can support the Carers Foundation or to register for your wellness programs, tell us where to find all this valuable information.
So probably the first thing to do is to go to our website, which is thecaresfoundation.org. There carers can register for the retreats, or if you identify a carer in the community that you know is really struggling because they don't get time to do it themselves, just go online and put their name in, and then we can sort of fill out the rest later. If you can't fill out all the details, just put something in all the boxes because it won't go through unless you do. But just, I'm their neighbour, I can see she needs help, blah, 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 blah. He needs help, a young carer that, you know, is struggling and doesn't know she's a carer, that sort of thing. Obviously, you can always offer to volunteer. Donations are always gratefully accepted, and you know, even just joining up in a monthly, you know, regular giving program, just donating $5 a month will make a huge difference. And we'll be launching that Cuppa for a Carer campaign soon, where people can just donate $5 for a month let us to give a carer a cup of tea or a coffee. Look, just any professional services, you know, people can offer on our courses. So we do counselling, we do massage therapy, natural therapies, anything that will provide any wellness or gentle movement, yoga, Reiki, any healing services at all. We do wellness, we do care packs, so any products to help us with our, you know, to give our carers that can't attend. So we like to send them out in the mail to carers just to let them know that somebody's thinking of them, they're not alone, just a little wellness pack to help them get through the day. And I guess any organisations can always become involved by becoming a partner, or they can sponsor events, they can sponsor carers to come to the retreats, they can sponsor a full retreat. There's lots of ways to get involved, obviously, so any support would be, you know, gratefully accepted until we get, you know, our centre and our
that's the vision and the goal to work
towards. And of course, anybody that wants to, you know, donate the centre, we're happy with naming rights. We just need $5 million, but that's okay.
And hey, we've all got to start somewhere.
Awfully,
so that's
awfully tax deductible.
You've created the building blocks and the foundation steps. So we just need to keep climbing, and Lots of people out there to help you climb. And
any donations obviously are all fully tax deductible. We're a full DGR1 charity. So, yes.
All right. Well, we'll put all your links up on the show notes. And as a charity, we need to recognise that you do rely on your donations to help make life better for unpaid carers. So our support helps them to influence your policy, raise awareness and create real change. So we definitely need to continue the conversations about caring for the carers. So here's a couple of little quotes from Ronnie's little journal. The smallest things can make the biggest difference. Be kind, and we all should take that on board. And the other one was, no one has ever become poor by giving. And that was a quote from Anne Frank, which is so very true, isn't it? No one has ever become poor by giving. No. Thanks, Ronnie. It's been a great conversation and one that needs to be entered and engaged in over and over and shared over and over again.
Yes.
So as I said, we'll put your links up on the show notes and on our website for anyone wanting to reach out to Ronnie and the Carers Foundation Australia. Take care and stay safe, and we look forward to catching up with you a little later on the year to find out what's been happening in your woods at Cedar Creek there, is it? Cedar Creek?
Yes, here we are, we're up at Cedar Creek. Thanks all so much for the opportunity as well, Jo. That's been wonderful.
Thank you.
Hey, Glowgetters. Did you know that Jo Sainsbury is a published author for her book High Heels to High Viz and has been named an Amazon #1 bestseller? Telling the story about Jo's transition from the corporate sector into industry, High Heels to High Viz acts as a guide for women who are considering a non-traditional role and career. High Heels to High Viz is available for purchase online at all leading bookstores, including Amazon, Dimex, Waterstones and eBay.
Well, that's it, guys. I do hope you've enjoyed our show and our guest. Our very big very big special thank you to Ronnie Benbow of the Carers Foundation Australia for sharing all that goodness and warm and fuzzy with us today. A great deal of invaluable information, and I hope that it's something that's resonated with you all today and that you can implement and pass on and by all means become a giver and not a taker. So donate to the Carers Foundation Australia. Now, you may now be asking yourself, how does caring affect my life? Well, although for many carers, caring can have positive and rewarding aspects, and there are lots of reasons why caring can also leave you needing support. So caring can have an impact on many aspects of your life. Becoming a carer can feel like a constant battle to access help for you and the person you care for. So, for example, getting the right diagnosis for your child's condition, appropriate support at school for a young carer in your family, adaptations to the home and benefits and other financial help. Caring can make you physically exhausted. You might be getting up several times in the night as well as caring throughout the day. You might need to lift and support an adult who is a lot heavier than you. You might be juggling caring with looking after the rest of your family and holding down a job. Caring can leave you emotionally exhausted because of the strain of seeing someone you care about experiencing pain, distress, or discomfort. Caring can lead to stress, depression, and other mental health issues. And caring can affect your relationships with your partners or other family members. If you are caring in a couple, you may no longer be able to have the physical or emotional life you had together, nor enjoy shared activities or plan for a future together. And caring can be isolating, as you might find you can rarely leave the house. Now, it may be hard to sustain friendships or develop new ones or keep up with the interests and activities you may have previously enjoyed. The Carers Foundation vision is to provide a purpose-built education and wellness support centre for carers Australia-wide, and they are passionate about their vision and committed to doing all they can to make it a reality, to provide an avenue for carers to feel renewed with health and vitality so that they are able to continue their caring role. And that all caregivers will be acknowledged and valued for the significant work they do, including aged care, mental health, young carers, disability care, cancer care, and end-of-life care. They rely on the generosity of the general public to donate and support carers in desperate need of help across the Australian nation. A donation, no matter what size, can make a real difference to a carer's life. A small contribution can make a huge and lasting impact. As always, I really appreciate you guys giving me your time to listen to the radio show. You can find more information on this episode with Ronnie Benbow and the Carers Foundation in the show notes or on my social media pages, or visit the website www.kickasswomen.com.au. Don't forget to subscribe to the podcast to get the latest episodes sent directly to you. Well, that's all for today's show. Thanks for your company and for listening to Kick-Ass Radio. It's not goodbye, but see you later. Stay safe and well. Keep in touch. Pos comms. Go on, get your glow on. Become a glow-getter.
Thanks for tuning in to another episode of Kick-Ass Radio, where we kick goals and deliver empowering conversations for women. Want to hear more from Kick-Ass Women and Joe Sainsbury? Visit the Kick-Ass Women website or follow Kick-Ass Women on Facebook, LinkedIn, and Instagram. See you on the next episode of Kick-Ass Radio.